and a royal palace for himself. Solomon conscripted 70,000 laborers and 80,000 stonecutters in the hill country, with 3,600 to oversee them. Solomon sent word to the king Hiram of Tyre, "Once you dealt with my father David and sent him cedar to build himself a house to live in. I am now about to build a house for the name of the Lord my God and dedicate it to him for offering fragrant incense before him and for the regular offering of the rows of bread and for burnt offerings morning and evening on the Sabbaths and the new moons and the appointed festivals of the Lord our God as ordained forever for Israel. The house that I am about to build will be great, for our God is greater than other gods. But who is able to build him a house, since heaven, even highest heaven, cannot contain him? Who am I to build a house for him, except as a place to make offerings before him? So now send me an artisan skilled in work in gold, silver, bronze, and iron, and in purple, crimson, and blue fabrics, trained also in engraving, to join the skilled workers who are with me in Judah and Jerusalem, who my father David provided. Send me also cedar, cypress, and elgum, timber from Lebanon, for I know that your servants are skilled in cutting Lebanon timber. My servants will work with your servants to prepare timber for me in abundance, for the house I am about to build will be great and wonderful. I will provide for your servants, those who cut the timber, 20,000 cores of crushed wheat, 20,000 cores of barley, 20,000 baths of wine, and 20,000 baths of oil." Then King Hiram of Tyre answered in a letter that he sent to Solomon, "Because the Lord loves his people, he has made you king over them." Hiram said, "Blessed be the Lord God of Israel, who made heaven and earth, who has given King David a wise son, endowed with discretion and understanding, who will build a temple for the Lord and a royal palace for himself." And 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 16 to 20. "Do you not know that you are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in you? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy that person, for God's temple is holy and you are that temple. Do not deceive yourselves. If you think you are wise in this age, you should become fools, so that you may become wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. For it is written, 'He catches the wise in their craftiness.' And again, 'The Lord knows the thoughts of the wise, that they are futile.'"
I suppose there's two things that I want you just to keep in your mind from what from Brian's reading. The first was the thing it says, "And Solomon built a temple and a royal palace for himself." So, and just thinking about the excessiveness of the stuff that is going into this building. When I was beginning to sort of think about all of this and where to kind of pitch this morning, it was the next chapter, the first line of it, that because there's chapters and chapters of this stuff with detail about how they went about buildings, the kind of the temple. But it says, "Solomon began to build the house of the Lord in Jerusalem on Mount Moriah." Now then, my mind immediately went to the mines of Moria, the legendary kingdom of the dwarves in The Lord of the Rings, for those of you that have seen the film. And I was quite tempted to show you a little clip. These magnificent halls that were delved out of the insides of the mountain. The dwarves mined the treasures there. They loved the treasures of the mountain. They liked the darkness, but they delved too deep, it says, and allowed their greed to disturb things buried deep in the darkness that should not have been disturbed. So when the Fellowship of the Ring is passing through these mines, forced to travel there against their goodwill, seeing both the glory of it and as well as meeting the doom of it all, well, it has grave consequences for them. Gandalf the Grey falls into darkness, saving the rest of the group to continue the quest to save Middle-earth and to destroy the Ring of Power that is ultimate evil. But that fall is great. And what is lost? Well, what began as beautiful and glorious became corrupted, and it led the dwarves to their death as well as others. It's part, it's only part of the film and the book, but it's one of those parts where when you read it or see it, you kind of have to stop. Something has broken. It feels, in those moments, all is lost, which isn't so good because there's still 2.5 books to get through to find out what really is going to happen. So, I moved away from Moria and the mines of the dwarves, although it seemed to me it said something quite important to us about things that start off with good intentions and somehow along the way get skewed or go too far or push the boundaries or cannot stop themselves once they start. And that seemed to say a lot about power and maybe our politicians sometimes. This is quite a week to be thinking about power and wisdom. And we've been reminded in a shocking way that politicians are just people with families and often a heart to do good. And it's been a bit of a bolt, like a bolt out of the blue in the midst of all of the words being bandied around, that words lead to actions. Hate is a strong word, yet it does feel like it has been let loose somewhat amongst our communities. With all the words that have been used recently about Brexit or Remain, what terrible words they are, really. And now we stand on the brink of the decision. And I don't know if you've made up your mind, if you're someone who made up your mind quite quickly about what you were going to do and you haven't changed, or whether you're someone who has wavered back and forth. I guess many will stand in their booth and make up their mind right there and then, which feels right on the day. We need wisdom to make the right choice, which is hard when there are so many differing voices and few clear facts about what we do or don't spend on the EU, what we do and don't get back from the EU. And then there's all the stuff which isn't about money at all, it's about relationship. I'm going to be quite careful because it's not up to me to try to sway you one way or the other, even though I have quite strong views on it all, if anybody wants to talk about it. But it does make an interesting backdrop for where we've reached in the Bible story. Solomon has been remembered for his wisdom, a whole book of sayings, as well as some of the dealings that he had with particular people. I wonder what we know about Solomon. Not huge amounts. We know that he was very famous and powerful, probably the most powerful king of Israel. Certainly the richest. He was very wise at collecting so much stuff that he had gold beyond measure. But he's also a bit of a mystery. We don't actually have much in the way of historical evidence that helps us to get to know him as a person, much different from his father David, who we kind of saw right through from beginning to life as the shepherd boy through to the king with some of the stories. Well, we knew much more about David and his character. But Solomon, well, his kingliness seems to separate him from us, from ordinary people. He is everything that royalty at its height should be. Grand and mysterious, aloof and full of ceremony, not your cuddly handshaking bedside manner royalty that we quite like today. Solomon's style was that of judge and ruler. So to capture a picture of Solomon, you need to think big. Grand and majestic, kingly and powerful, rich and famous. Big building programs that he financed through trade links with other powerful nations and rulers. He was probably one of the most ambitious kings. He set out to be the greatest. He wasn't a great army leader like his father, but he was wise enough to build up his cities and army so that he had little need to fight many battles. Solomon was no fool, and down through the centuries, he has been remembered for his wisdom. So the book of Proverbs, the book of Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, all of those are largely credited to Solomon. Books made up of sayings and advice, contemplation about the meaning of life, the judging of characters, questions relating to suffering and the deep experience of life, all kinds of words that are given as reflections on experience and knowledge and the consequences of certain actions. They're supposed to be words offered to help with everyday life and relationships. And it got me thinking, what's the wisdom of our day? And where do we go for our wise words? Well, some do, James, that's true. And we might be in the majority here for saying that we would go to the Bible, but there are many other people looking in all sorts of other places for wise words to help them. Words. Words have such power. Power to change things. Power to change lives. Power that make other people act. It's interesting, one of the places that the Bible records Solomon getting some of his wisdom is on the deathbed of his father. So he recognizes something about listening to other people's experience. Quite a wise thing for us to remember. Age and wisdom don't always go together, and our parents or grandparents aren't always the easiest people to listen to, but often experience is a good teacher, and it's wise to listen to the experience of others, especially those that have lived through other times. Especially because we know that history repeats itself. And we can see that happening all around us. We see it happening in Syria and Ukraine and Iraq and Nigeria. It brings home just why we're still prosecuting 90-year-olds who were responsible for deaths in the camps of Auschwitz and Belsen. So much that's been part of this week. People do terrible things, and yes, history repeats itself, but we can choose to listen to those who have gained wisdom through experience. And Solomon is wise enough to do this, so he listened to his father because he knew that as king, David had had to fight others for his kingdom many times. There's great wisdom in listening to the voices of experience that are the gift of God to us. So Solomon listens to his father who gives him quite a rundown about, well, the first things to do once he becomes king, which is, first of all, suggests that he gets rid of all the opposition. Any rivals to the throne, Solomon takes his advice, and there's lots of detail about the way he disposes of various brothers who might challenge him for the throne. But he also recognizes that within his father is this constant desire to know God, a devotion to God that in spite of all of the difficult things that David goes through, of all of the terrible things that he does with his power, somewhere still till the end of his life, he seeks God. And Solomon sees his father's devotion, and I guess that's part of why in the end he builds the temple. It was part of what his father had sought to do but was unable to do. And to Solomon, he builds this temple that God didn't seem to want. We talked about that last week. It wasn't that God wanted to be placed away in a big solid building with only certain days that certain people who had been specially chosen could come and meet God. Solomon builds the temple out of the riches and the finery, all of the things that we perhaps value more than the things that are wise to value. Solomon builds a temple, and the church has gone on building temples. And there's a temple in almost every community. And even though some of them have now been turned into private homes, and very nice they are too, and even though some of them have become warehouses and wine cellars and all sorts of other things, there's something about these buildings, not that God is kept within them, but they still act as a reminder that God is there in the midst. They still speak to those in power and remind them that they are mere mortals. The temple, the buildings, will always be a reminder that there is something beyond human power, and we must look for wisdom in other places than our politicians. We need the courage to ask for wisdom that is more than what helps me, but is about what helps us all. And the Word became flesh and lived amongst us. The Word that is Jesus, He took our shape, our form, and lives with us, who puts words and actions together and leaves us some of his own wisdom. Somewhere in the midst of it all, words inviting us to love our neighbors as ourselves. Words that remind us to take the log from our own eyes instead of worrying about the sticks in our neighbor's eyes. To remember that no one added a single day to their lives by worrying. But the maker of heaven and earth knows what we need most. God is not cooped up in a temple. God lives within any who open themselves and seek wisdom and love for themselves and for others, to keep seeking that which is beyond us until we find it. So many words of wisdom that we could have talked about today. I think in the end, one of the main things for me is that reminder that God is there in the midst of it all. And somehow we must seek and search and find and look and keep looking again, learning again to know our Maker.